Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. You are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and today we're diving into a topic that's as relevant as ever and something that I just experienced not looking after myself with appropriately: malaria. It's a disease that still claims hundreds of thousands of lives globally each year and continues to pose a real risk here in Africa and even in parts of South Africa. But what should we know? What can we do to protect ourselves? And what's being done to fight the disease? Stay with us. Let us have your questions on our WhatsApp number on 0618951019, and we will get the wonderful, fantastic, awesome, and epic Professor Lucille Bloomberg, who is an infectious disease specialist and expert, to answer.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. Joining us is one of the country's foremost experts on infectious diseases, Professor Lucille Bloomberg, to unpack the facts, dispel the myths, and help us understand malaria's ongoing impact, both at home and abroad. Professor, thank you for being with us. You are one of my favorite guests. You know that.
Thanks, Nicholas, and thank you very much for raising the subject of malaria again. You know, I think we need to save lives. It's preventable in many cases, but it's treatable if it's detected early. Nobody should die of malaria in 2025.
I think that's such a valuable point. And I think on the 25th of April was World Malaria Day. And I was actually heading off to the Kruger at that time. Now, I had a bit of a mistake. We chatted off air and I said, please don't shout at me, Prof. But I got an invite to go to Kruger at the last minute. And on the way there, I realized, holy cow, I haven't taken any medication. So I went straight to the nearest Dis-Chem pharmacy, got the appropriate meds, and I think I've been using them for a week. Afterwards, I have to put them next to my bed so I don't forget to take them. But It is something that is so important. If that's something that we can just chat on and touch on. So how prevalent is malaria in certain parts of South Africa and across the continent?
Well, in South Africa, it's relatively low. We are moving slowly, but in the right direction to eliminating malaria, which means no local transmission. But Africa has the highest risk of malaria in the world. And the high-risk countries and countries where most deaths are in Africa. So Mozambique, Nigeria, DRC, Uganda, Tanzania are all concerning areas. But South Africa, you went to the Kruger National Park, it's relatively low. It is the height of the malaria season. We've had good rains, but relatively low. And quite a lot is done in the Kruger to spray places where you stay. There are screens, there is air conditioning and fans. So relatively low risk, but not no risk. And good on you that you did some prevention. And importantly, just look for any fever. We're in the flu season now. So I think an important message is anybody who develops flu-like illness, fever, they've been in a malaria area, they need to have a malaria test first, not reach for flu treatment. That's where mistakes are made.
And if I remember correctly, last time that we spoke, Professor, you said if the first one is negative, have a second test.
Nicholas, you're a good listener. I hope, though, that with your medication, you did get some mosquito repellent, personal protection. is really the first port of call. And if you're not bitten, you won't get malaria. So insect repellents, DEET-containing products, apply to exposed areas when the sun goes down, that's number one. And then drugs will be an additional preventive measure.
I think from my own personal experience that speaking to you has been so informative that before sunset, I was indoors, already sealed in with the air conditioner. No doors were opened after sunset. And even sleeping with the mosquito net around the bed and the air fan on as well. So making very sure that I wasn't bitten. And lots of garlic.
I'm sure you had a wonderful time.
Absolutely spectacular, spectacular time. What are then maybe some of the myths around malaria, some of the common myths that people believe that may end up putting them at a little bit higher risk?
I think the biggest one is that if they take preventive medication, it will mask the symptoms, mask the diagnosis, and lead to problems. So if you take prevention correctly, and that includes personal prevention, plus drugs, not 100%, but it's pretty close. And you can reduce the risks considerably, you know, more than 95%, but it's not zero. So I think that's an important thing to remember. Even if you've done everything right, occasionally there are some breakthroughs, but that's rare. So still get tested and still get tested urgently. The second is, you know, this myth, and I think I've already mentioned it, that if you take medication, you won't be able to diagnose it and you will mask the symptoms. Mm-hmm. So that's not entirely true. You know, if you repeat the test, the first one is negative, you repeat it second or third time, you will pick it up. But I think the medication, if it's a really risk area, will reduce the risk of malaria significantly. And just remember, you know, it's a potentially fatal disease. There are delays at every step. Oh, it's Friday. I think I'll wait till Monday. And, you know, an extra day or two with malaria, patients get into serious trouble, progresses rapidly. You need to diagnose this within the first 1 or 2 days. Once you get to 4 or 5 days, you know, severe malaria may be there already. And it's much harder to treat. So it doesn't mask the symptoms. It will protect you. Prevention will protect you in the majority of cases. And if it's a risk area for malaria, you know, do what's necessary.
I think it's such a wonderful thing to have places or resources like the Kruger National Park in South Africa or some of our more tropical environments. And it was incredibly dense and incredibly wet there because they've had so much rain. But it's the most relaxing place in the world to go to where the moment you get you forget all your troubles. It's been too long since I've been, and to go back is the most wonderful thing. But as you said, we need to be very careful and not to be a fearmonger or a scaremonger. But if we could chat about some of the symptoms of malaria and how serious can they be?
So the symptoms normally occur quite suddenly. There will be fever, invariably, headache, muscle ache, a feeling that the bus has gone over you and you wish it would reverse. Cold shivers and hot sweats. Children, a bit more subtle, they could have fever. They don't normally have these cold shivers and hot sweats. They don't always complain of headache. But they may be lethargic. They don't feed properly, increase in respiratory rate, bit of vomiting. Much more difficult in children. So the biggest problem, and I've already said it, is it gets confused with influenza. And now the season is overlapping. We're moving into May now, so malaria should go down. Hasn't been a hectic year, fortunately, but flu season has started, and it started a couple of weeks ago. And people still have COVID on their minds. So if they get these symptoms, they think, oh, it's flu, oh, it's COVID. You need to inform your healthcare practitioner that you've traveled. And if you have these symptoms, you need to demand a malaria test, a rapid result. Negative, repeated, very good. You're a good pupil, Nicholas. And if it is positive, there's a need for urgent treatment. And treatment is very effective. But, you know, it needs to be given urgently. It's not a tomorrow disease. It's today. Diagnose and treat today.
Diagnose and treat today. When you talk about a rapid test, how quickly does one get the results? So is it instantaneous?
So there are a couple of different tests. The so-called gold standard is a blood smear in a laboratory. Mm-hmm. They stain the blood, have a look at it under the microscope, and you should get a result within about an hour, 2 hours. You should get that result. And it's the health practitioner job to get that result. There are rapid tests, which we can talk about a little later.
Perfect. Thank you. Let's go to our first ad break, and we will come back with Professor Lucille Bloomberg, infectious disease specialist. We're chatting malaria. Let us have your questions on the studio WhatsApp number 061-895-1019. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics inside Dis-Chem pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. I'm joined by the brilliant Professor Lucille Bloomberg. Yes, you are, Prof. And we are currently chatting malaria, as April 25th was National Malaria Awareness Day. And just before we went to ad break, we were touching on some of the tests. Prof, could you tell us a little bit more about the testing that is available?
So the gold standard, as mentioned, is a blood smear. It needs to be done in a laboratory by people who are trained to look at the blood smear. There are rapid tests. These are little sticks, little strips, and a drop of blood is applied, a little bit of buffer. They need to be read at 20 minutes, and they can give a very rapid result. So many clinics in our malaria areas have them. Many emergency departments have them. Some doctors have them. I don't think pharmacies will have them. Many people present there first with their flu-like illness. But they do provide a rapid test, but they need to be done correctly. They're not as easy as everybody thinks, and I am reluctant to give them to travelers who are going into Africa because they don't do them properly. But they're a very good, rapid, and usually accurate way of quickly diagnosing malaria, where access to laboratories, particularly where access to laboratories, is limited. There are also some molecular tests, but those are used for special occasions. It's really easy. It should be easy to get a rapid test. It's when it's not done because no one's raised the possibility of malaria, because the travel history is not known or the history of residence in a malaria area is not shared. That's when they don't get done. And then, the health practitioner or the patient reaches for flu medicine instead of having a test. Mm-hmm. So that key message, flu-like illness, fever, residence or travel to a malaria area in the past month, you must get a malaria test urgently. Whichever one is chosen, just know some of the limitations, but they're good.
So just to touch on that, we're looking at a month. It's not just the week after you're back that you're taking your medication.
No, I think a month. Remember, there's what we call an incubation period. So from the time of the bite to the time of symptoms can vary, can be as short as 7 days. It's usually about 10 to 14 days, but up to a month, I think, is reasonable. We do have some of the less common species of malaria. The period can be longer, and two of those species cause relapses, weeks to months after the infection, unless you pick them up and treat them accordingly. But really, I think it's that month which is critical to just remember malaria.
So it's just good advice that even if you've been to a malaria area, if it is a bit of time still, just to go, hey, you know, I'm not feeling great. I was in a malaria area. I would like to demand a test. And if that is negative, I'm going to demand a second test because, as we've discussed before, Professor, patient empowerment.
And exactly.
That's some of the best advice I've gotten. That's what I love about the show. I learn so much about my own health and well-being. And it is, we need to demand that, listen, I'm happy for it. It's, you know, and if it's negative, have a second one. If it's negative,
then you know, Nicholas, if you look back on people who've developed severe malaria or those who've unfortunately died from malaria, there's a misdiagnosis, often as flu or COVID. There's a missed opportunity to test. There's a delay. Patients who come very late. And by late, we mean, you know, 4 or 5 days after the onset of the first symptom. Because nobody thought about it. You know, none of this should happen, ever.
I think that's so much work has been done to develop the treatment and for these diseases. Let's take advantage of it
and
protect ourselves.
Don't become a malaria victim. It's really unacceptable.
If we're looking at sort of drug resistance, you mentioned different strains. Are these concerns that we're looking at, are we seeing drug resistance in treatment for some of these diseases? What can be done?
So we're using what's known as artemisinin combination therapy. So it's two drugs together. So they are together, they combine, so you can't choose the one you want. The value of combination therapy is to try and reduce the emergence of drug resistance. Mm. We know in some areas the drugs are separate, and then, you know, they have end up taking one drug, so it's not protected by a second drug. And drug resistance has definitely emerged, particularly in Southeast Asia. We're starting to see it in Africa. It's being carefully monitored. It's not a current problem in Southern Africa, in South Africa. So it's something that needs to be carefully monitored, and there will come a time where we need to change our first line therapy or introduce different therapies to reduce drug pressure. So absolutely, it's a concern, but the current drugs, Coartem is the drug that we use, works extremely well. There are some rules though. It's only for uncomplicated malaria. So if there's a misassessment of severity, it's not going to work. You need something intravenously. It needs to be taken with fatty food. Otherwise, it's not optimally absorbed. And then in people who are, let's say, more than 80 kilograms, one may need to adjust the dose and have a longer course. That's not in the guidelines, but it's something that should be considered for people who are more than 80 kilograms, 5 days instead of 3 days. But importantly, stick to the dosing and take it with a sandwich with some margarine or butter or full cream milk to optimize the absorption. And those rules are often not followed, or patients don't know about them. And if you're vomiting, obviously you need to go to intravenous therapy.
Right. That's such an important point in terms of how and when to take the medication, because whether we're speaking to experts about antibiotics or probiotics, whatever, it's always with food, because you want to protect the medication from the acids in your stomach and your gut and other to maximize absorption. So you've got to have that food in there.
I think it varies for different medication, but it's really critically important for Coartem.
Okay. A question as well that I wanted to ask, just on this discussion, is it advisable, and talking about patient power and patient empowerment, to speak to your healthcare professional, to your doctor, to the clinic, to say, look, I'm going away. If there is a problem, what are the steps that I come in? Because you don't want to be feeling terrible and then wondering what to do. So almost preemptive, where you're speaking to your healthcare professional to say, should I come back? Should I be feeling this? What are the steps? How, you know, booking an appointment, coming in, what do I do? Where do I go? Because for me, I'd say, okay, well, do I go to my GP? He's full. This one, you know, what are the steps that we can take before we go to ensure that if we come back and we're not feeling good, we can get this treated as quickly as possible?
Okay, so the before you go, there are many websites that have got very good information on how to protect yourself against malaria. There's different risks in different areas, different times of the year. So Kruger in winter, it's really quite low risk. You may just go with mosquito preventive measures. Mozambique or similar area, especially during the season from October to May, you will add a drug to your personal measures. In terms of when you come back, you do need to wait for symptoms. You can't, a blood test with no symptoms is not going to show anything. So there's no point in coming back and say, please, will you do a malaria test? I want to know that I wasn't infected. That is not possible. It's really when the symptoms start, and it's the fever, the sudden onset, cold shivers, hot sweats, muscle, you know, the bus going over you. That's when you need to go, and you need to go quickly. You know, those symptoms will have a periodicity. So there will be some hours where you feel like, oh my goodness, just awful. And then they may abate for a few hours, and then they will come back. Just be careful. You know, don't go, I think, oh, well, you know, maybe it's getting better. And it's not the time to take antipyretics, antibiotics. If you've traveled and you have a flu, fever, flu-like illness, you need a malaria test. And never forget that.
Never, ever.
And if it's Friday, sorry, you need to go.
Let's get it done. What's the Shabbos? Just get it done.
Yes.
Because
so, you know, if you think, if you do come back and you have access to private healthcare, your general practitioner may be available. Otherwise, emergency departments of many hospitals are the place to go. You can't make an appointment for next of next week, you know? That's not 100%. What you want. You need to seek care. And then our public sector, there's a lot in malaria areas. They will all have rapid tests. We do a lot of training. If you look in Johannesburg, a lot of the clinic staff are trained. I've been involved in that. Just raise your hand and say, I have traveled to a malaria area. I have symptoms, blah, blah. You know, set that scene. I think it's really important. Medical practitioners, nurses, doctors, pharmacists are very busy. And we need to remind everybody that malaria is a possibility. You know, we're still in COVID flu mode. So raise that. Don't let it slip through your hand
and let them know so that they know you're not just there for feeling flu-y, that it may be malaria.
Exactly. Patient power.
Patient power. A quick question on to malaria vaccines. There has been a bit of a buzz sort of around that in the last few years. Are there malaria vaccines coming? Is this something that we could be looking at?
So after a very long time, you know, it's a complex life cycle that you're looking at. We do have two vaccines. These are only for young children in what we call hyperendemic areas, areas where there's a lot of malaria. They do have, I think, reasonable efficacy. They reduce the risks of malaria and severe malaria, but they only really can be used as part of a general control program. On their own, they're not effective enough to prevent malaria. And, you know, outside of South Africa, you go to these endemic areas, Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, Mozambique, DRC. It's the very young children who are affected. And that's where you see severe disease and deaths. with repeated infections, and they are exposed every year to multiple infections. They acquire some immunity if they survive. So it's that target group under five, actually under three or so, where the vaccine is targeted. It's not for travelers. It's not for people living in malaria risk areas here. We don't have that immunity developing, and malaria risk is at any age. So we will not be using malaria vaccines, and there are no vaccines for travelers.
Right, okay. Speaking about traveling, what advice do you have for people traveling internationally? You mentioned Southeast Asia. You mentioned several African countries that are really, really high risk. What are the, and this is assuming that people haven't heard us discuss this before, because they should remember. But what is the advice for those traveling overseas?
Let me just change that question around a little bit. We're often asked about incoming travelers who are visiting, you know, our area of Africa. I'm a little more cautious about malaria and really want to emphasize the risks, even though we know they're relatively low in parts of our country, including Kruger Park. We don't want tourists appearing on the front page of the New York Times. There are often delays in diagnosis. They travel, they think they've got a jet lag, they're just tired, and they ignore the symptoms. And in many parts of the world, access to diagnostics and treatment is not readily available. So I'm very cautious with travelers. In terms of South Africans going elsewhere, I think you need to, there are many maps. The risks do vary, and they vary within countries, and they vary at different times of the year. So I think Africa as a whole, there's a malaria risk, but if you're going to Nairobi for a week, there is no risk. It's a bit like Johannesburg. It's quite high up. If you're going to Mombasa, Zanzibar has a relatively lowish risk. I think you have to look at a specific country and the region, the area within that country. I think for South African tourists, Mozambique, I know there's been a decline in tourists, which is a great shame. It's a wonderful place to visit. There is definitely a risk throughout the year. There's been quite a lot of control and good control in the southern areas, but that would be an area where I would definitely take prophylaxis and personal prevention. And yes, you know, go and have a wonderful time. I'm all for traveling.
Yeah. If one is traveling for an extended period of time, 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year in Southeast Asia, as an example, are you taking the malaria medication for the entire season that you're there? How does it work? What would one do if one is in a malaria area for an extended period of time?
Yeah, so Southeast Asia, the risks do vary. There are some with almost no malaria risk. Go to Bangkok, you're not going to be exposed to malaria. You may get dengue or something else. So you have to look at specific countries. Africa probably poses the biggest risk, and we have a lot of people going to work in Africa for extended periods of time or traveling. It really will depend on where you're going. The first, I think, port of call is to reduce mosquito bites. So stay in a place where the screen's on windows and there's a fan. You can use some mosquito repellent. The season is, you know, pretty much year-round, but within that, there are high-risk seasons related to the rains and much lower risk. So many of the prophylaxis have not been advised long-term. I think you have to look at what are the risks of maybe some side effects of the drugs versus acquiring malaria. I think the most important is prevent mosquito bites, high awareness, know where, you know, the local clinic is, and also take maybe some emergency treatment. So if you can't reach a clinic, you get a fever, you just take it, presumptive treatment. Become your own doctor.
Become your own doctor. But I think my understanding is, and we're going to go to an ad break now, just before we do, is that there is so much information, there's so much experience and expertise around malaria, there's no real excuse not for looking after yourself. And Prof, when we come back, I'd like to chat about sort of climate change, global warming. Are we seeing the areas changing and possibly expanding? We'll get onto that as soon as we're back from our ad break. And should you have any questions for Professor Bloomberg, let us have them on 061-895-1019.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm chatting with Professor Lucille Bloomberg. We're talking malaria. Let us have your questions for the professor on 061-895-1019. That is our in-studio WhatsApp number. Prof, before we went to ad break, we were chatting about the effects of global warming and climate change. Are we seeing malaria areas change, expand, grow, shrink?
All of the above, actually. South Africa, there's been, I think, pretty good control over the years, and our malaria area transmission areas have reduced. So that's good news. Certainly in some areas where, you know, mosquitoes and the parasites do like a little warming, we're seeing expansion and maybe into higher altitudes. We're also seeing the emergence of what we call new vectors. So vectors are, it's mosquito transmitted. So there is a relatively newly described mosquito called Anopheles stephensi, or Stephensi, I never get it quite right, that is quite a quite an efficient vector. It's it's found in cities, around households, and much more developed areas. Whereas we used to see malaria more in the rural areas, stephensi occurs in more built-up areas. It's a very efficient breeder. It feeds a little earlier in the day. And that started in the Horn of Africa, I think, and is moving down. We don't have it here yet, but we need to adapt our control measures to you know, always look for these new vectors and accordingly, according to their feeding, breeding habits. In South Africa and a number of countries, we use nets, which are impregnated with insecticides. There is some resistance to some of these insecticides. They have new generation nets, probably a bit more expensive, but we will have to see how these pan out. They do provide a barrier, even if there's resistance and there isn't a repelling of the mosquitoes. We rely on what we call indoor residual spraying. So the insides of houses in our malaria transmission areas are sprayed with long-acting insecticides. Many of the lodges are also Kruger. I think they do spray some of the camps. So the mosquitoes that often feed indoors then go and sit on the wall and they will die. This has been done for years. We are pioneers. It's very effective, but it's labor and cost intensive. So different ways with different places.
Okay. So, Prof, I know that we've covered quite a lot on malaria, but I also, from our previous shows, we have touched on a few other things. I think there were issues with the seals, with rabies.
Oh, gosh, we mentioned yes.
Dengue fever. Is there anything, as we just start to wrap up the show, we've got 15 minutes left, so that you would like to touch on?
Keep away from the seals. And if you are an open sea swimmer, perhaps you want to be vaccinated before you go swimming. Two vaccines comes at a cost, highly effective and will protect you. And then after you're bitten, I mean, incidents are not that common. It's much easier to follow up with some boosters. The other thing is the Indian Ocean Islands have got chikungunya. Chikungunya is a virus transmitted by a different kind of mosquito to malaria, causes a rash, severe joint pains, and they have seen an outbreak in the last few months in Reunion, some cases in Mauritius, so just to be aware of that. Again, insect repellents apply to exposed areas daytime. Mosquitoes for malaria, bite at night, may be protective. And then, just to come back to the rabies, which is my favorite subject, make sure your dogs and cats are vaccinated. Don't approach animals you don't know, nor should your children. And if they are bitten by an animal that is sick, bites for no reason, children do tease animals. So try and get that history, get it out the way. You need to get prevention and good wound cleaning. Tick bite fever, season's gone down. We're in flu season now. You should have all been vaccinated if you are over 60 or have underlying medical conditions like diabetes, asthma, and similar lung problems. It's well underway, and it's quite a busy season. So better hurry up and get your flu vaccine. It takes 10 days to work.
And get it done ASAP. So probably we've got two comments and questions from our listeners. First one is from Carol. We lost a dear friend to malaria. They went in December to Kruger. On return, they kept saying she had flu.
Exactly.
She went into a coma and passed away from cerebral malaria.
That's terrible. I'm so sad to hear that. I think that is the typical story you hear. An extra day or two of delay in treating malaria and calling it flu is what this is the outcome. That is so awful. So sorry. Just remember, pregnant women should avoid malaria areas. They do get more severe malaria much quicker. And so, go to Margate or somewhere else doing for your holidays. Sorry.
100%.
Whatever.
Then we have another question. What about children and malaria medication? Is there a minimum age?
So very young children, you can put them under a net, when the mosquitoes come out, and they'll stay there and won't get bitten. I think if you're going to a high-risk area, I think you need to look at the season, look at the risks. They have much more subtle signs. They develop malaria. The progression is much more rapid. So, I think you need to do a risk assessment. We do have medication now. There was a time where it was not available to prevent malaria in children, very similar to the Malonyl in adults. It's called Hetavinol. They're both available over the counter, so it can be used. But I think, look at the area you're going to. Try and choose a lower risk time of the year, and definitely, all the preventive measures you can apply. So it's not a no-no. I think it's a risk benefit, and making sure you take all the precautions.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with prevention that we may not see. It's that the prevention may prevent us getting, or will prevent us getting, malaria or rabies, or when we're cautious about when we go, what we do.
Yeah.
So we don't actually see its benefit because we don't end up with it, but it definitely works, and it's the most cost-effective way to deal with it.
Yeah.
Probably going to go to an ad break, and then I'd like to get your thoughts when we wrap up the show.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. I've been chatting with one of my favorite guests, Professor Lucille Bloomberg. We've been talking malaria. We've touched on one or two other things. And Prof, sorry I had to cut you short there before we went to ad breaks, but I don't want to get into trouble with Craig. So please, as we wrap up the show, can you share your thoughts with us with regards to malaria?
Yeah, I think to take this year's malaria themes, reinvest, reimagine, reignite. We've lost some of the ground, and we need to, otherwise malaria will take advantage and come back. But most importantly, protect yourself and seek care if you've traveled to or live in a malaria area and you develop fever or flu. easily diagnosed, easily treated. Don't miss that opportunity.
And that's such a wonderful message to close the show on. Just because the work that has been done, which we are very grateful for, and the work that's being done continuously, just because that is so effective, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't take malaria and its threat very seriously and take advantage of everything that is available to us in prevention. And if we do feel flu-y when we come back for up to over a month, and probably you mentioned there might be some that might be even longer, just mention, tell your healthcare practitioner, tell the person that you're dealing with, hey, I've been to a malaria area and I would like a test. And if it's negative, get a second test. It's about patient empowerment. Professor Bloomberg, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, your insight, your expertise with us. You know, malaria may not always be in the headlines, but it's very, very clear that it remains a very serious threat to us if we are in those areas, if we're traveling in and out of those areas. So, Prof, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Nicholas. Be well.
You too. That was Professor Lucille Bloomberg, infectious disease specialist, chatting to us about malaria. Very simple. You guys know what to do now. Please stick to the protocols. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to 101.9 High FM, the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. My name is Nicholas Ingle, the fantastic Craig Guthrie, pushing all the buttons and keeping the show flowing smoothly, and my wonderful producer, Sina Pabetsi, getting us these fantastic guests for you. Thank you for joining us. Look forward to chatting with you next week.